Neil Catskill.
Live from Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dold. Hey, welcome to March. This is the first local edition of a new month. Spring is knocking on our door. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. It's been 3 years since the invasion of Ukraine, and there have been major developments on America's role in that conflict in just the past couple weeks. We get local reactions from Ukrainian-American Nadia Raj coming up. And we wrap up Black History Month here on our first episode of March, because every month is Black History Month. We're going to meet Amanda Ward and learn about her father's story, Roland the Gator Ward, and his lasting contributions to Sullivan County. It's coming up in the second half of the program. But first up, we have an update on the prison strike, which entered its third week today. The State Department of Corrections has begun firing and fining striking corrections officers as the Wildcat strike enters its third week here, with over 350 officers facing civil contempt charges and health insurance cancellations. Governor Kathy Hochul defended the state's punitive measures while strikers argue the tentative deal does not adequately address prison safety concerns, particularly regarding solitary confinement restrictions under the HALT Act. The strike has already cost New York $25 million, with estimates reaching up to $106 million per month if it continues, while four inmates have also died during this period, which has prompted investigations. This comes right now. We have Jun-Yun Hong from New York Public News Network with the full report.
Less than 10 officers have been terminated, and more than 350 officers are facing civil contempt charges. The announcement from the Department of Corrections is the latest sign that the state is turning to punitive measures after a tentative deal struck last Thursday failed to convince hundreds of striking officers to return to work. According to state officials, the strike is costing New York $25 million. If it continues at its current rate, the monthly cost will hit more than $100 million. Jackie Bray is the state commissioner for Homeland Security and Emergency Services. She said the state has done what it can to work with officers, but now has to resort to terminations and civil contempt proceedings.
We have negotiated in good faith at the mediation table across a broad range of topics, going as far as we can legally go.
Corrections officers say the tentative deal doesn't go far enough to repeal the HALT Act, which sets limitations to solitary confinement. Daniel Marticello heads the Department of Corrections, and he says that's up to the state legislature.
There's really no change that we can immediately make to the HALT Act other than to go to the legislature to make changes.
Several facilities have stopped participating in the strikes over the weekend. That includes Greenhaven, Fishkill, Shawangunk, Hudson, Taconic, and Sing Sing facilities. In Albany, I'm Jun-Yun Han for the New York Public News Network.
We have more news from Albany, unrelated news to that last story. New York Governor Kathy Hochul has announced plans to expand the so-called You're Hired initiative, and that would be to attract recently fired federal workers. She says the state has about 7,000 public sector job openings to fill, and former federal workers could be a good fit.
We're looking for qualified, experienced candidates across a wide variety of fields. I need technologists, I need engineers, I need attorneys, healthcare workers, educators, public policy experts, and so many more.
Hochul says the state has about 7,000 public sector job openings to fill. The Empire State will also roll out billboards in Washington, D.C. and New York City to draw former federal employees to state jobs. Hochul says the state labor department will host virtual webinars to help workers transition. Now here on the local edition, we mark a sad milestone. The Russian invasion of Ukraine started on February 24th of 2022. It means it's been more than 3 years of ongoing conflict. Now, as the war persists and support for Ukraine reaches a critical juncture, concerns are growing regarding the long-term sustainability of this aid. Recent developments have further complicated the situation. Recent Oval Office meeting between President Donald Trump and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky ended in a heated disagreement, leading to the cancellation of a planned minerals deal intended to support Ukraine's defense efforts. The confrontation was marked by President Trump accusing President Zelensky of, quote, gambling with World War III, end quote, and abruptly halting the minerals deal. This fallout has put U.S. military support for Ukraine in jeopardy, with the Trump administration considering ending ongoing military aid. Radio Catskills' Patricio Rabayo spoke with Ukrainian-American Nadia Raj, who also serves as the Sullivan County Legislative Chair, and he got her thoughts on this anniversary and began by asking for a perspective on the agreement discussed in the Oval Office.
I don't think it was an argument. I think it was a Shanghai. The president of Ukraine came to discuss the future of his country and his people. This has been a three-year war where people are dying, tortured, raped. Cities are being destroyed. This is an aggression of Russia against Ukraine. Number one, Zelensky is not a dictator. Mr. Putin is the dictator. He's a war criminal. Number two, Ukraine did not start the war. Russia did, because it wants the territory where Ukraine exists now. It wants to annihilate all of the people there, the culture, the language, the people. This is an absolute genocide. Zelensky, President Zelensky, is trying to end this, but you can't end it without some kind of security measures, because Putin will not stop. He is a war criminal. It's one thing to sign a deal for the raw minerals that Ukraine has. It's another thing to get some kind of security from America, from the United States, that they will intervene and not allow Russia to continue bombarding Ukrainians. There was a deal signed by President Zelensky, as we heard him say, but Russia continued to bomb and to murder people. They will not stop until they gain what they want. I personally have to say that after Friday's view of this being aired, I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed that our president and our vice president lost control. They invited President Zelensky into their home, the United States Oval Office. And this is how you treat a foreign dignitary, a president of another country, by berating him and throwing him out. I'm absolutely appalled. I'm ashamed as Ukrainian American, ashamed. So this is not going to end. I'm grateful that the European nations came together and have formed a coalition to help and support Ukraine into getting some type of end to this craziness that Russia had started. Russia started this. And for our president to have interaction with a war criminal and not the victim, which is President Zelensky in Ukraine, is another sort of question mark. Why is he so nice to Mr. Putin and not to President Zelensky? So as a Ukrainian American, I have questions on all fronts. I truly hope that this war does end. Today, as I read one of the handouts from our organization, that one in five children in Ukraine has lost a relative or friend since the war started 3 years ago. Ukraine continues to search for nearly 20,000 or more children who have been illegally kidnapped and transferred to Russia. Return them back. This is just absolute lunacy. There are war crimes that have been witnessed during this period that include execution-style killing of men and women, the torture of people held in detention in occupied territories, sexual violence, and filtration camps. So for our vice president to say to Zelensky, I don't want to see your pictures of propaganda. Seriously? Have you been there? Have you seen Bucha? Have you seen Mariupol? Have you seen any of these cities that have been destroyed, people tortured, people killed, women raped, children raped? So on that, I end. I do hope that this war ends. I do hope that our president and vice president come to the table again with President Zelensky and do reach some kind of agreement for a ceasefire that is permanent, where the country of Ukraine can flourish and survive.
And Nadia, I just want to talk about, just to reflect on the three-year, anniversary, better way to, I'm not sure the best way to call it, anniversary of this war. And I just want to see what has been happening locally. Has the Ukrainian help changed over the past 3 years? What have you been doing locally? I know there's a big Ukrainian-American community that you're a part of through your church. How has the aid or how has the remembrance happens or the help has changed in the past 3 years?
I know that at the start of the war, we had two rallies in the Lumberland-Glens Bay area that I had initiated. Unfortunately, one of the things that has impacted is President Trump's removal of the TPS status of these people. The U for U, Ukraine for Ukrainians, Aid for Ukrainians, TPS status has been eliminated. That is one thing that we had at the county level sent a letter to all of our senators, congressmen to reinstate that for these folks to remain in this country and not be deported. They are not here because they want to be. They're here because there's a war in their country. So we would like that to be reversed. That is one thing we did. We do continue to send aid with money, with packages, with whatever these folks need over there in Ukraine and elsewhere in the diaspora. But there are articles that have been sent by me into the area newspapers, our media. So outside of that, there's very little we can do outside of contacting our representatives in Washington, D.C., and letting them know that Ukrainians here in America are not happy with the situation and where it is going. Again, President Trump needs to realize that Mr. Putin is the war criminal. He is the dictator. At the end of World War II, we did have the Nuremberg trials where these folks that were responsible for the deaths of many Jewish people, the Holocaust, were brought to justice. We need to do the same thing with Mr. Putin. We cannot give him the land that is now being occupied by Russia. That is not a doable, that should not even be on the table. It is not up to the U.S. to say that Ukraine cannot be part of NATO. It is not up to them to say that. Ukraine has always wanted to be part of NATO, and Ukraine has fought desperately for those occupied territories that are now occupied by Russia. This is not a way of rewarding Mr. Putin for initiating the war. That land belongs to Ukraine. And all I can say is, Mr. Putin, get the hell out of Ukraine. Stop the war. Stop killing innocent women, children, and men.
And the full interview, there's much more to that interview. It's up at WJFFradio.org. And also this morning, if you miss it on Radio Chatskill, Tim Bruno spoke to Dr. Larissa Drisco, a Ukrainian-American residing in Sullivan County. We checked in with before for reactions to this news. And here's just a little bit of that conversation.
What were your initial thoughts when you saw that President Trump and Vice President Vance berated President Zelensky in the Oval Office last week?
Deep pit in my stomach. I think a lot of Ukrainians, not to speak for them, but I have heard from family members and from friends in Ukraine, were optimistic that there might be some sort of arrangement where both countries could benefit from the minerals that are available to be mined in Ukraine and to somehow return the investment that or return some of the funds that the United States has contributed to Ukraine over these past 3 years. So it was a disappointment. It was also a shock the way the turn of events occurred. All in all, it was very, very difficult to process. I think everybody's still reeling from it.
Are you still processing it then?
Yeah.
President Zelensky left the White House and headed to London, and their world leaders are gathered and are trying to solve this issue, solve the war, bring about peace. What do you think about this effort now that's going on in Europe?
I think it's also important for Europe to take some responsibilities, to take more responsibility for protecting their borders. What Ukraine is involved in is not just for themselves. They're at the borderland, you know, of this incursion, and they're protecting their land, their people, but also the countries that would be potentially back in the imperial sphere if Russia were to decide that they wanted to expand, which unfortunately it looks like might be in their thought processes. So having Europe take more responsibility for their not only for Ukraine's military protections, but also for their own, is just the right thing to do. So that part of it is a good development. But what has happened in the United States is just really difficult to understand. I hope that they're able to mend that.
And it's Dr. Larissa Drisco talking to Tim Bruner this morning on Radio Chatskill. That full conversation is more than 15 minutes long, is up at WJFFradio.org. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it's Amanda Ward. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Support comes from Sullivan Allies Leading Together, committed to ensuring the safety of our community. Protect those most important by keeping medications in a secure space. Be a part of the solution. More at saltcares.com.
You see the relationship really change dramatically. Instead of Joe Biden sending arms and standing with Ukraine saying, we will never, never, never not be with you, you have Donald Trump coming in and calling Zelensky a dictator, saying it was Ukraine falsely that started the war.
I'm Michael Barbaro. That's Today on the Daily from the New York Times.
And that's coming up in just 13 minutes. Before then, we still have a little bit more of The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me. Sullivan County Legislator Amanda Ward represents District 8th, and she shares the story of her late father, Roland the Gator Ward, and his lasting contributions to Sullivan County. From his early days at the Fallsburg Police Department to his rise as a lieutenant in the Sullivan County Sheriff's Office, Roland Ward made an impact on the community. Amanda Ward's now advocating to honor her father's legacy by co-naming a street in Fallsburg, emphasizing the importance of recognizing individuals who have positively impacted their communities. With Radio Catskills' Patricio Rubio, she also reflects on her experiences as a proud Black woman, discusses the significance of celebrating Black history, and highlights her ongoing efforts to reestablish the Human Rights Commission in Sullivan County. Here's Amanda Ward.
So he actually started his career in policing with the Fallsburg Police Department and then went on to work for the county, where he worked as a deputy. He patrolled many of these county roads that you travel on, and then he ended his career as a lieutenant. And so he was able to rise to the rank of lieutenant while at the sheriff's office.
Now, I want to talk about this proposal you made to the town of Fallsburg to honor your father. You presented at the Fallsburg Town Board meeting a couple of weeks ago. You are looking for a plaque or a co-renaming of a street for your father in Fallsburg.
Yeah, so the proposal that was made was really something that is quite, what's like a tradition in many communities and counties all over New York State. You'll see it a lot in New York City. We do have actually some roads right here in the town of Fallsburg where you have folks that are commemorated for whether it's their service in the armed forces or what have you. And as I have traveled through Sullivan County as a legislator and just as a community member, I find that there have been so many people in Sullivan County that have been touched by Roland Ward, who happens to be my father. And so the stories that I have heard along my journey, traveling to whether it's events or meetings, and folks are so kind because he passed 2 years ago, and everyone always shares not just a story of Roland the Gator being a likable individual, but how he impacted their lives, their children's lives, and in some instances, their parents' lives. And as I was reflecting and attended the MLK event with the that Sullivan 180 put on and really got talking to the students of My Brother's Keeper really inspired me to really start thinking about the history of Sullivan County and that everyone who lives here has such a great piece and part of the history of Sullivan County. And then I said, you know what? There's got to be a way that the community, you know, that they're saying such wonderful things about my father and how he's impacted their lives. And what can we do to continue that legacy, even in his passing? And as I began to think, and some community members even gave me some recommendations, the co-naming, which is not the renaming, but more of a commemoration of a street that had some significant importance to my father, Roland Ward, the Gator, and that street happened to be State Route 42. Very difficult to do a commemoration on a state route, not impossible. And the other street is Railroad Plaza. And so that's how this was birthed in terms of, you know, how it manifested in an actual presentation and a proposal to the town of Fallsburg board.
Now, Issa, he's had over 40 years of service to Sullivan County, and I'm curious about the nickname, the Gator. How did he get that nickname?
Oh, that's such a great story. The Gator came from, and I honestly thought that it was a nickname that he got while, you know, he's born and raised down south, Uniontown, Alabama. So I thought that's how he got the name. No, that's not. He actually got that name after while attending the FBI Police Academy. Mm. And from what I understand, he actually was pushed into the pool, into the water, and could not swim for his life, which I can't swim either. And he went straight to the bottom of the pool, and the Gator wound up walking the length of the pool on the bottom of the pool and got himself out.
Wow.
Walked on the bottom of the pool. And that is how he got the name the Gator.
That's amazing. That makes sense now. He was like an alligator.
Exactly. And what's even more amazing is that it stuck with him. I have to tell you, I'll sometimes say Roland and people are like, oh, I don't know. I might have known him. And then when I say the Gator, they're like, oh, I know exactly who you're talking about. Yes.
And you yourself, I've seen in past articles, you mentioned that you're really following in your parents' footsteps. Your mom, who was still around, was a family home care provider for over 30 years, special education teacher for 5 years at the Fallsburg Central School District. Served on the school board, and you yourself were a judge in Fallsburg. You were adjunct professor at SUNY Sullivan for a while. And one of the things in this meeting that I wanted to talk about is when you brought up your father and your mom was there and your daughter was there, you talked about being a proud Black woman. And I just wanted to talk about what it means for you to have that feeling of being a proud person, a proud Black woman in Sullivan County in America.
I mean, that's such a great question because I love the sentiment when folks say to me or share with me that they don't see color. And I think it's important for me, especially in the role that I am, and as a parent, as a mother, as a daughter, as a sister, as a friend to folks, to be able to share that there's nothing wrong with being Black. And that isn't something that I want to go unnoticed. I happen to be a Black woman and I'm proud of that. And the reason I say that is because we know historically that Black folks were oppressed. My father went to a school that was named Perry County School for Negroes in Uniontown, Alabama. This was a school that was opened up for about 300 to 400 what they called Negro boys and girls at the time he was school age. And so my father grew up in a time where he had to shop on a certain street, where only Black folks could shop on that street, where folks could only drink from certain water fountains. We're talking about a time in history that wasn't that long ago where if Black folks were traveling and they didn't have a special book of places to stop that were safe, their lives were in jeopardy just for the color of their skin, our skin. And so it is important for me to educate my daughter, and now in a role where I'm in government, to be able to educate the community that I'm proud to be a Black woman, and my daughter should be proud, and my father was so proud to be a Black man who grew up during a time of segregation where Black folks did not have the same opportunities, and to migrate during around the 1950s, to migrate to Sullivan County with a bunch of his friends, and to be able to make a life for himself, and not just make a life for himself, but to impact his town and his county, and even beyond this county, was pretty far reaching the impact that my father has had, and to become a part of Sullivan County history.
Did your father saw you become a legislator?
My father did not, but I'll tell you, he's with me every day, and I say this to those that I talk to and that share stories about him. My father is with me every day. He was such a man of humility. He was selfless. He gave himself to his community. Civic duty was very important to him. It was just his nature. He was such a modest man, a man who didn't need much to be happy. And so he knows that I am a legislator, although he didn't get to physically be here. I will tell you, though, he saw me as a judge, and he had a special seat where he would come and watch me until he got sick. And my father has been, I call him, he's like my road dog. Whenever I had an event, wherever I had to go, he would be in the car already. Seatbelt on. Where are we going, Amanda? And although he's not physically here, he's still here in his legacy and in the work that I continue to do, not just in my home with my daughter and my mom, but also in the community and as a legislator.
I lost my mom 13 years ago, and then I could say that I feel the same way. I feel like my mom's always with me, no matter where I go.
Yes,
so.
Yes. So my heart goes out to you, and you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. This month being Black History Month, you mentioned that when sometimes folks tell you they don't see color and you understand the sentiment that they're trying to say. And, you know, you hear the question sometimes when this month comes around is why are we celebrating Black history? Why don't we celebrate other histories like we do Black history? But I think in your telling your father's story, you find out why you are celebrating, why we celebrate things is the things that your father went through, the time, his work, and to recognize the work that he did for the county. Because, you know, there was a time in his country not too long ago, like we talked about, that history made by Black people wasn't considered real history. It wasn't included in part of the American story.
That's correct.
So I just want to see if you would talk a little bit more on why is it important to celebrate Black history?
It's incredibly important, number one, because, you know, you take today's event and the inquiry that was made by me to our county historian to talk about the Harlem Renaissance and to talk about the impact it had on Sullivan County. And many community members who are raising children here and families here don't know how rich our history is. And when I say our history, not just Black history, but here in Sullivan County, we have such a rich history. And you won't see a lot of that history in books. You just don't. Today, we talked about Willie Mae and the Lucky Lake Estates. And there are so many more stories like that. And if we don't tell them and if we don't talk about them within the context of what we have here, Black History Month, because we actually should be talking about it all the time, right? It should be in books. We should be discussing it. Then we're not recognizing a large piece of history and a large piece of what makes our community what it actually is. And so that's why it's important to continue to educate our community, to educate ourselves, to share the stories, and to recognize that everything that we're doing is a part of history, especially amongst the Black community. And for these students here who are part of My Brother's Keeper, this was something that was started during the Obama administration. And so it's important for those that are active in My Brother's Keeper to know the importance of Black history and to understand their power, their purpose, and their call to action to get involved and to be active participants in their community to see the change.